The following program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
I am Pastor Ernie Sanders, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. My radio broadcast, What's Right, What's Left, is coming up right now.
Coming to you live from Independence, Ohio.
You changed our life for the better in many different ways.
Heard around the world every Monday through Friday.
Pastor Sanders is always years ahead of the rest of the media, telling you exactly what they're covering up.
This is What's Right, What's Left.
I tune in every chance I get to hear exactly what's going on with the voice of the Christian resistance.
Unabashedly cutting through the rhetoric by exposing the hard topics facing our society and world.
A lot of the other news medias don't pick up the news items like he does.
And bringing to light the enemies of freedom who are out to steal your rights, your children, and enslaving you.
You really get the truth out. I can tune into your show and hear the unvarnished truth. Thank you.
This is What's Right, What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance on this 13th day of January 2026. And tonight, my co-host, my producer, my amigo, is none other, you know, that amigo, that could mean a couple of things. One, it could mean friend, yeah. The other means bow-legged brat. But anyhow, style is the guy.
Well, hola, amigo. I won't tell you which.
All right. We'll leave it at that. The title of the message is The Preserved Word of God versus the myth historical and revisionist history. And I left off here. Well, we've been talking about this part of this message. It's a long message, but this part of this message is dealing with all of the revisionist history you have today on the nation of Israel. Have you seen what's been all over the internet and those knuckleheads that keep sending me that stuff about Israel not being Israel, the Jews not being the Jews, they're Khazars, and the land of Israel is not the same land that God gave in the covenant. So this is absolute lunacy, folks. It's like stuff that you hear from the Democrats, okay? But anyhow, we're going through this. It deals also, and we have a history also of Gaza, because, you know, they'll tell you that Gaza was never a part of Israel. In fact, I think I might just read again the actual landmass that God gave in the promise. Now, Israel never really, except for a very, very short period of time, under King Solomon, did Israel actually occupy all of this territory. But we're going to pick it up here tonight in Genesis chapter 22, starting with verse 15. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time. Now, the angel of the Lord here, this is actually the Lord Jesus himself, what you call a theophany. You know, when there's a pre-incarnate appearance of him, which more directly is a Christophany. And we know that's him because of the authority, because he has the ability to personally promise. And this promise is the promise of God. It says, and the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven a second time and said, by himself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and the seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. Now, in those days, style, when he talked about the stars of heaven, how many stars do you think can be seen with the naked eye?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Right around 3,000. Around 3,000 can be seen with the naked eye. Anyhow, how many grants how many grains of sand can you see?
I have no idea.
Neither do I. But anyhow,
I guess we got that in common then, huh?
Yeah, that's why we're amigos, you know. All right. And thy seed shall in all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. How is that? Can you tell me how are all the nations of the earth? Because Abraham was the very first Jew, right? But he was also the father of the Arab nations. So how did that happen? What was it that came? Look, I'll give you a little hint. Let's go over here to read verse 11 and 12. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast known, thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from thee. Well, God knew all along. He knew how Abraham was going to respond, but he's telling who did not know. It was Abraham himself, because you put in a situation that was really that he had to trust God here, a man at his age to sacrifice his son. But how did Abraham know for absolute sure that God would find a way to deliver that son?
How's that?
Well, Abraham had promised God that, or God had promised Abraham that through Isaac he would raise up a nation, okay? And he couldn't do it if Isaac was dead, could he?
Right.
So, anyhow, so here he showed his faith. So that was two places you saw here that this was done on the authority of God. And so I wanted to go to very quickly again because of the controversy of that, where they keep telling you that Israel was never promised that land, and that land where they're at today is not the land of Israel. Now, do you know the real boundaries of the promised land? I do. So that land that God gave to Israel included everything from the Nile River in Egypt to Lebanon. And that starts from south going to the north. And everything from the Mediterranean Sea to the Euphrates River, and that's from west to east. So if you look on the map today, on the land today that God has stated that belongs to Israel, includes everything modern-day Israel possesses, you know, which is there today, which they claim is not Israel. Okay, in other words, how in the world could you possibly claim? That would be like saying the Statue of Liberty is not in New York City. Okay? Or that would be like saying Lake Erie does not border Ohio and Canada. That was a different lake. Okay? So how would you answer that? Because they're saying that the Jordan River was not the Jordan River where it was. Okay? Mount Olives is not the real Mount of Olives. How do you answer that, style?
I mean, geographically speaking, strictly, the modern nation of Israel does fall within the boundaries of biblical Israel, at least portionality, as you said. It's much larger, biblically speaking. There was much more to it than what is modern Israel. But geographically speaking, that land is in the same location.
Well, the promised land, you're right, because if we go over there, here, we take a look at all the territory that was occupied by the Palestinians, the West Bank and Gaza, was a part of that, plus some of Egypt, if you're going over into Egypt, portions of Syria, and listen, all of Jordan was in the Promised Land, plus portions of Saudi Arabia and portions of Iraq. Now, you know, Israel, you know, I went over the entire country in 10 days' time. I mean, from coast to coast, from end to end, from east to west. And but, I mean, it's, you know, it's smaller than Ohio. It's about the size of the state of New Jersey, I believe. So here, today's Israel is only a real fraction of the land that God had promised. You know, I would think that land was probably, I mean, I, you know, I'm not real good at making these guesses. It would be more like the size of Alaska. And so the rest of the inheritance, they occupied that area just for a very small period when Solomon was king. And then, but when are they going to occupy that land again? Because God, that's the promised land that God promised them, that they would occupy that entire land. When do you think that's going to be?
I can't answer that question.
That's good. During the millennial kingdom. That'll be during the millennial kingdom. And so here, I want to go. I'll tell you, let's play the clip. We have a clip. It talks about Gaza, what's taking place over there in Gaza right now, folks. Again, they're trying to say that Gaza was never a part of Israel. Take her away.
Invented by newspapers. It is one of the oldest names known to us in human history. Its Hebrew root, Azah, means fortress, power, or strong city. And that meaning is no coincidence. Gaza was always a coveted location, a wall between empires, a key point that controlled the caravan routes from Egypt to Mesopotamia. Whoever controlled Gaza controlled the passage between two continents. Archaeologists have confirmed that Gaza was inhabited since the 3rd millennium before Christ. In Egyptian inscriptions, it is mentioned as a city subdued by Pharaoh Thutmose III in the 15th century BC when he extended his empire towards Canaan. We also find it in the Amarna letters of the 14th century BC, where the Canaanite kings asked Egypt for help against invasions and rebellions. Since ancient times, Gaza has been a crossroads, a place of power and conflict. With the arrival of the Philistines in the 12th century BC, Gaza became one of the 5 major cities of the Philistine Pentapolis, along with Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gath, and Ekron. From there, they organized attacks against Israel, built idolatrous temples, and strengthened their position on the coast. It was in Gaza that the Philistines took Samson, Israel's judge, captive to display him in humiliation in their pagan temple. That image remained engraved as a symbol of the enmity between Gaza and Israel, a city that rose up against God's people. Archaeologist William Foxwell Albright, considered one of the fathers of biblical archaeology, stated that Gaza was the most strategic trading point in the Philistine region, the key to Canaan facing Egypt. And the Greek historian Strabo called it the gateway to Asia, because whoever owned Gaza controlled not only trade, but also the armies that marched from one continent to another. But here a paradox arises. Although Gaza was called a fortress, it could never sustain peace. Its walls were torn down time and again by conquerors. Egyptians, Assyrians, Babylonians, Persians, Greeks, Romans, Crusaders, Ottomans, they all passed through Gaza, leaving destruction in their wake. Its history is a constant cycle of war, collapse, and reconstruction. Isn't it surprising that the name meaning fortress has become synonymous with ruin? How can a city meant to be powerful become a symbol of sorrow? The answer lies not in its geography or its politics, but in prophecy. From the beginning, Gaza was destined to be the scene of judgment. Its walls would not stand, its palaces would not endure, because the God of Israel had decreed its end. Now, in Philistine times, Gaza was not just a military stronghold. Its true strength lay in its strategic position as a gateway to international trade. Located on the ancient Via Maris, the route connecting Egypt with Mesopotamia, Gaza was a vital stop for caravans laden with spices, metals, grains, and textiles. Whoever controlled Gaza controlled the passage of the riches of the ancient world. Archaeologist Trude Dothan, a specialist in Philistine culture, explained that the cities of the Pentapolis, and especially Gaza, grew wealthy through maritime and land trade. Its port, although small, connected them to Cyprus, Crete, and Egypt. Finds of Mycenaean pottery and imported metal objects demonstrate that Gaza was integrated into an international economic system long before the days of the kings of Israel. Culturally, Gaza was a melting pot. Canaanite, Egyptian, and Aegean influences mingled there. The Philistines adopted customs from each people, but maintained their warlike identity. Its walls and palaces reflected power, but also luxury. Excavations in the region reveal large vessels decorated with marine symbols, figurines of deities, and remains of fortified structures that demonstrate an architectural style advanced for its time. Religiously, Gaza was a center of idolatry. Not only Dagon was worshipped, but also Astarte and Baal. The inscriptions found in the Philistine area reflect sacrifices, fertility rituals, and practices that contrasted with the holiness demanded by the God of Israel. This explains why the prophets denounced not only the violence in Gaza, but also its spiritual corruption. The Greek historian Herodotus, in the 5th century BC, mentions Gaza as a prosperous and powerful city in his time. For ancient peoples, Gaza represented a place of abundance and wealth, but this prosperity was not accompanied by justice, but rather by oppression and violence. In the words of the prophets, Gaza was marked for participating in the slave trade, handing over entire populations in exchange for profit. Its economic power was stained with blood. Thus, Gaza in Philistine times was much more than a military fortress. It was a commercial, cultural, and religious center, a place where caravans crossed, where temples rose with the smoke of pagan sacrifices, and where riches circulated to the rhythm of idolatry. But all that splendor was destined to fall, because behind the walls and the markets, Gaza had sown violence and sin. The paradox remains. A city that meant strength and was presented as an emporium of wealth and power was described in the Bible as a land of ruin. And no matter how great the walls are or how abundant the treasures are, when God decrees judgment, nothing can stand. Now Gaza, the city that meant strength, was directly pointed out by the prophets as a land of judgment. God didn't speak in generalities. He raised voices that denounced specific sins and announced specific consequences. Each prophetic sentence was linked to Gaza's actual behavior. Let's read Amos chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. Thus says the Lord, for three transgressions of Gaza, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment, because they have carried away a whole people captive to deliver them to Edom. I will set a fire on the wall of Gaza, and it will consume its palaces. Amos prophesied in the 8th century BC, a time when Gaza prospered at the expense of others' suffering. The divine accusation was clear. They had turned the city into a slave market. Gaza not only engaged in wars against Israel, it also captured entire villages, entire families, and sold them to Edom as mere objects. Its economy was stained with innocent blood. God responded with perfect justice. Amos's announcement was that the walls of Gaza would be consumed by fire. What did this mean? The walls were a symbol of his military power and security. God announced that they would burn, that their strength would be breached. The palaces represented the luxury and authority of their rulers. They would be reduced to ashes, showing that judgment would come upon the elite who had made unjust decisions. The violence with which Gaza trafficked lives would be met with the violence of judgment. What they sowed in pain they would reap in destruction. For his part, the prophet Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 4, "For Gaza will be forsaken, and Ashkelon laid waste. Ashdod will be plundered by noonday, and Ekron will be uprooted." A century later, Zephaniah added another dimension of punishment: total abandonment. Gaza would be abandoned. The Hebrew word used means left alone, without owner, without protection. It's the image of a ghost town, of ruins that no one wants to rebuild. This judgment was linked to the sin of pride. Gaza had prided itself on its strategic position. It controlled trade routes and established alliances with major powers, and its inhabitants believed this geographical advantage ensured a prosperous future. They trusted their walls and their treaties, but not God. The prophet announces that this trust would be broken. Gaza would be left empty, without an army, without commerce, without splendor. The place that had been a symbol of movement and wealth would become ruin and silence. The prophecy is not an abstract discourse. Each of Gaza's sins received a corresponding punishment: human trafficking, as Amos mentioned, exploiting entire villages to profit from slaves, punishment, fire and destruction of walls and palaces. Pride and confidence in one's strategic position, mentioned by Zephaniah, believing oneself to be untouchable due to alliances and trade routes, punishment, abandonment, desolation, and total emptiness. Gaza was denounced because it became an example of social corruption and political arrogance. Instead of using its privileged location for blessing, it used it to enrich itself through injustice.
Are you, we're back? Alrighty, there you go. We are back, and I think we're going to go to a quick break. I think. All right. Okay. No, never mind then.
Do some rearranging.
Well, what we'll do is we'll get right into some of what's going on. 35 years ago, we gave Somalia protection, this country, for those that were being, because of the persecution and the conditions in Somalia. Today, you know, Trump has revoked that protection, and he's given the Somalis time to get out of the country because of the massive fraud. And did you see that in one of the trials they were having there, the Somalis actually tried to bribe the jury? Did you see that?
Yeah.
And they're so corrupt that they gave them, I think it was, what was it, 200? And was it 260,000 or something to bribe? And the guy actually kept it, offered the juror, I think, 180,000?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they're just unbelievably corrupt. Okay. Alrighty, Democrats still don't know what a woman is. Did you get a chance to follow any of the Supreme Court hearing today?
No, I didn't get a chance to today.
I was listening to it. The judges asked the ACLU woman lawyer, the Amy, who was trying to representing the transgenders, what is a woman anyhow? And can you tell me what a woman is? Can you tell me what a boy is, or what a girl is? And her answer was, no, we can't determine that. How stupid is that? I mean, here, and guess who was sitting right there? Ketanji Brown, right there on the court. Of course, she's the one that came out with this to begin with, when no one knows what a woman is, right? So, I mean, how can you just, you know, and I know it, it's beyond common sense. There's no common sense in it. You know what a woman is, don't you, Style?
I sure hope I do anyway.
I mean, well, tell me, what do you think a woman is?
Well, there's only two sets of chromosomes, so I don't think it should be that hard to decipher between XX and XY. It usually is pretty apparent by appearance.
Well, yeah, but there's a much more common sense answer. See, listen, women could be grandmothers, they could be mothers, they could be aunts, they could be sisters. What do you think that? I mean, that's what women can be. We don't have to talk about that. They don't know that, right? I mean, you can't be a grandmother, can you, Style?
Not that I know of.
Right. And if a Democrat says to you that you're a woman, well, you'd be able to explain to them that why you're not a woman, right?
Sure.
Maybe you need to talk to this ACLU lawyer. Anyhow, speaking of Democrats, Pocahontas, you know who Pocahontas is, don't you?
Yeah.
Who is Pocahontas? You forgot her name, didn't you? Pardon? Oh, we're having a problem, huh? Oh, boy. This is not good. So I'm wondering if...
We're all good over here. I had to fix something on the other station for a second there.
Okay, very good. Alrighty, well, anyhow, Pocahontas says that the Democrats have to do more than just hate President Trump. She said, we have to convince, and I changed that word to fool the people into trusting us. When she said we have to convince the people they can trust us, well, actually what she meant is that we have to fool the people into trusting us. And so, and then you've got that new mayor of New York.
El Mandami?
Yeah, moron Mandami. He says, now listen to this, because this shows you that there's definitely a relationship there with Tampon Tim Walz. He says for his new house, his new place, he wants a cat and a bidet for his new house. Now, him being a Democrat, like Tampon Tim, who, you know, gave tampons to young boys and had tampons for himself, do you think that this Mandami might want that bidet for himself?
I mean, probably.
That's a deep question, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of people don't even know what that is.
I just don't know why it matters.
Well, it's because he said on national news that that's what he wanted. They asked him what he wanted, and he was on national news for his new house. So... But
it's crazy the things that are national news these days.
Yeah, no. President Trump disappointed me today. I wonder if that would bother him to know that he disappointed me. He did a good thing, and then he did a stupid thing. What do you think that was?
You tell me.
Well, the good thing, he went over, he gave a very good speech there at the Detroit plant or the Ford plant in Detroit, which was good. And he's learning how to be a real entertainer, actually, in a sense where he has a sense of humor. But the dumb thing that he did was he responded to a Democrat as he was going through the Ford plant, and a Democrat, a heckler, started shouting and yelling, and Trump... Well, he showed him that, the middle finger, the IQ one. And that should not Trump have done, okay? That right there, when he did that, that The heckler won. The heckler won that encounter because of that. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where it doesn't bother me so much, but it's something where professionalism should go a long way. And you'd expect someone in his position, regardless of who it is, you'd expect someone in his position to be able to handle a small-time heckler like that and not let it get to him. So I understand the frustration in that regard. Am I upset about the action so much? Not particularly. There's better ways it could have been handled. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I think, again, it all comes back to my point I always make. I think there's bigger issues.
Okay, so, but how quick do you think, how many minutes do you think it took for that to go on to international news?
Oh, I'm sure within seconds.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was seconds.
Okay,
again,
so,
it's crazy what's national news. Mondami's bathroom plans and Trump getting mad are national news.
Well, here's the thing about, I mean, you know, Trump has had a reputation, you know, amongst the world leaders, you know, as being someone who does what he says, and that just really didn't help him at all where it comes to credibility, did it?
Well, and I think that's the wild thing to think about, too, is you think maybe 10, 20 years ago, if any president had done this, or we saw similar situations. I mean, Bush was criticized, not to this extent, but was criticized for similar unprofessional actions. It was national headline news for, you know, minor missteps out of the political forum, right? The political decorum that was the presidency, the seat of the presidency. It's crazy how far that's devolved in the past 10, 15, 20 years of...
What was that incident?
There have been a few. We can talk about Bush Sr. or Bush Jr., you know, the puking, the golfing. There's been a bunch of incidents that were deemed unprofessional. So there's been a few.
Yeah, I
man
know.
Man and fish living peacefully. It's crazy to think how taboo those incidents were 20 years ago. And now, like, while this incident today would have been national news that could have ended his presidency 20 years ago, more or less people today go, yeah, look, here, it's more of the same. Here's what we expect out of him. It's crazy to think how much that climate has shifted.
Now, on all these people that Trump's going to endorse and that, how many times do you think between now and the midterms, when they have the Democrats are going to show that on the air, showing here's the guy that endorsed him or whatever, they're going to do that?
I'm sure that'll be a great little smear tactic for him in any opportunity they can.
But it won't last long.
Hopefully people can see through it. I'm probably not the person to ask about political endorsement anyway. I don't believe in just because someone likes someone that means they're the right choice. I mean, Mike DeWine just endorsed Vivek Ramaswamy, and everybody supposedly hates Mike DeWine, but now all the Republicans want to vote for Vivek Ramaswamy, and now they like DeWine. It doesn't mean anything to me. I wish we'd stop with the red and blue and look at the actual person running for office.
Now, there's another fellow that's running who really makes a lot of sense of what he says, and we need to hear them all, okay? But anyhow, you know, communist rulers, did you know when all of this, what you have out there with the riots, this is we're in the middle of a communist revolution. And the insurrection that's taking place out there, what category of people do you think are the majority of those in the insurrection?
Bought and paid for ones.
Well, yeah, you have a lot of rent-a-mob, but listen, the vast majority of them are white women with kind of low IQs, and they have been indoctrinated and trained out there. It's an amazing thing to see them. Now here, many of them are, you have a lot of lesbians amongst them out there. They're shaving their heads. Why do you think they're shaving their heads?
I couldn't tell you. They think that it accomplishes something.
Okay, well, yeah, they think it gives them more power. You wouldn't be willing to shave your head to test it, would you?
No, I don't think I would.
All right. Well, anyhow, here, here's people that don't know what a woman is, that are anti-men, they're poor lesbians, and they're out there, today many of them were out in front of the White House, or the Supreme Court, and these trans women, because they want to be able to have these men who think that they're women because they can dress up like a woman, they want them to be able to play in women's sports even though they don't know what a woman is. Okay? And here they're being paid to send out these false messages. Now, I don't know if you saw them, the speakers there at the Supreme Court today, one of the female representatives, House representatives, said that she does not want to show her private parts in order to prove what she is, okay, her gender. Well, I saw her face, and after seeing that, I really didn't want to see her private parts anyhow, okay? but what do you, I don't know, that's... And these are the people that are in charge of government, that are in our government. They were out there today, and if you were listening to them, everyone that got up to speak, they just had a rant, of inflammatory profanity. Why do you think they do? Do you think that they get up there and they just let that filth come out of them? Do you think they do that because they think it empowers them, or what?
I don't know the thought process, because as a normal, I guess relatively normal, I'll say for argument's sake, as a relatively normal person, you sit there and look at it and go, well, that's just asinine, that's dumb. Who would think that you're making a good point just because of, you're saying things that are curse words or swear words? But I guess maybe in some twisted sense they think that gives them power. I know the physical, the actual reasoning behind the use of these words and the way or the conviction that they carry is twofold. One is, a society, we've deemed certain words bad words, and a word is a word. We've determined what it means. If you don't get offended by it, you don't get offended by it. The word has no power. But two, the physical reason that we think these words have power is because how they feel gutturally, especially THs or Ks in the English language have a more impactful feeling when you're forming them in your mouth. That's why a lot of swears use a TH or a K as emphasis points in the word. So the fact that you have a short, quick word that's been deemed bad by society that has a subconscious impact in your speech, they may think that's power to them. Really, you've said it 100 times, it's just ignorance showing through, and that's all you can come up with.
So, with people that, have a higher morality, I don't want to hear what you've, the F-bomb, as they call it, I don't want to hear that from men or women, but it's worse. When I was a young man, even your age, you never heard women talk like that. Boy, I mean, if you did, you just didn't hear them. It's just like in those days, the only time when I was growing up, you saw a woman with a tattoo, you'd have to go to the circus to see that. Nowadays, so the morality has just really diminished. And to me, that goes right along with their intellect, okay? And so here you had this woman, and I think her last name is Reed, and I know she's on television. I'm not sure which station she's on, but she was on there today wearing a vest filled with profanity, written right on it, okay? to me, when I see these women doing this, the first thing that comes to my mind is they're whores, because that's the way a whore would act, okay? Now, you know, where it comes to certain words being offended, you know, God's Word, the Bible, has a lot to say about profanity. And, you know, God condemns it. And if God condemns something, shouldn't we pay attention to that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is actually something I've looked into quite a bit because I was curious on it. And as far as you were saying about the attire having profanity on it, again, I think that's exactly to your point. That's just a sign of low intellect. Why would you look at something like that and be like, yeah, I'm going to wear that. That makes a statement. That's just dumb. That's ignorance showing through. When it comes to biblical profanity, the context of the Bible talks about the speech of hate in reverence to your fellow man, or derogatory speak of the Lord. It's not so much, you know, here's a list of bad words. It's how you use them. And if hate is the intention behind them. And again, I think a lot of that gets blurred with society today. To go back to the main point, I'm not bothered by words, any words. I'm really not bothered by them. I don't take it to heart. I don't feel offense by words because I don't like the two-sidedness of the left says you can't say these words, and then the right gets offended when there's other words. I don't deal in that. I just don't get offended. It's not that hard. It's not that serious. And again, biblically, you hold yourself accountable to not speak words of a place of ill will or hate towards your fellow man or towards your Savior. But I think we put too much weight into them. And absolutely to your point, again, a lot of the times, I mean, you can listen to any modern rap, and it's just excessive gratuitous swearing for the sake of excessive gratuitous swearing. And I don't want to hear that, because that's exactly what it conveys, is ignorance in place of lyricism.
Okay, dummy, I get it. All right, listen, you know, what's taking place out there with those screaming women, those liberal white women, now there's a study. The psychologists are doing a study because it's like this phenomena, and they're finding out that there's actually a form of mental illness because of being trained. There's this, what they call front groups. Have you ever heard of the front groups? The front groups are indoctrinating these women. They're taking them in, and they're indoctrinating them. And here, they're looking at this now as a new type of mental illness. What do you think?
With the excessive screaming is being taken as a mental illness?
Yeah, the attacking, the screaming, the attacking, and the violence at ICE agents. The things that, and obviously the things that they're screaming out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a reach to say that people who are screaming into the woods or shaving their head or having breakdowns are a little lacking in the mental stability compartments.
Do you think that screaming at the trees in the woods should be legal?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt anyone. Why not?
Well, you know, it doesn't do the trees any good, probably.
I can't imagine it doesn't much harm. Maybe there's a biologist out there, an ecologist, who's going to disprove me and say that the sound waves are actually harmful to the trees. But
alrighty, we got some interesting articles here. One of them is we were talking about there in Minnesota. By the way, you know, we talked. Remember, we told you about 2 weeks ago. We're going to see if they really bring Bill Clinton in, okay, and charge him with contempt of Congress. They said they're going to meet and bring charges against him. We'll see if they really do. Now, Hillary has till tomorrow to show up, okay, and give testimony. If she don't show up tomorrow, then they're going to start with contempt of against her. People don't expect the Republicans to see it through. They you know, because they've always seemed to let the Democrats get away with things. But anyhow, you're talking about there in Minnesota, the fraud. Just some examples of that here. A judge orders a Porsche, diamonds, $3 million, and a bank in Minnesota, and the Somali fraud scheme. In other words, a judge has issued an order that the convicted ringleader of the Minnesota Somali welfare fraud scheme must forfeit her Porsche, her diamond jewelry, $3 million in cash. A published report in the Daily Mail called it humiliating fall from grace for the mastermind identified as Amy Bach, 44. She was convicted of multiple counts, including wire fraud, and part of the scandal in Minnesota has focused on the nonprofit called Feeding Our Future. And so that's just one of the, that's just one example of the many. Now, guess what? There's more and more evidence that Tappan Tim himself and the prosecutor there, their attorney general, were involved in this. We're getting paid off by this. And it looks like the evidence is growing. And you know what that could mean, don't you?
What's that?
It could mean those two would get what they deserve, going to jail. That's jail time. That's criminal activity.
Well, hopefully.
Okay. Now, do you know there've been people going to these protests where you have these screaming low IQ women, and here they've noticed something. You know what they've noticed?
What's that?
That these same faces are at all these different protests all over, and they've found some of them. They've been able to put them at over 100 different protests. These are paid. These are rent a riot people. A video exposing professional protests, nearly 100 different protests, is going viral with 7 million views in just one single day on Sunday. The clip by independent journalist Nate Friedman was shared by Elon Musk and begins with Friedman interviewing a woman at a protest who says, "Right now, I'm representing myself and I'm representing the folks at Rise and Resist." Friedman asked her, how much do they pay you to wear this vest?" "Absolutely nothing," she responds. Well, there, you know, there was another one that, when asked, why don't you just get a job, like a regular job like others? And she says, "I'm working right now." She said, "I'm getting paid for doing this." She wasn't supposed to say that. But anyhow, Rise and Resist bills itself as a nonviolent direct action group committed to opposing, disrupting, and defeating any government act that threatens democracy, equality, and our civil liberties. It also claims all profits pay for our signs, banners, handouts. We are 100% unpaid volunteers. Do you believe that?
No.
I don't either. Friedman says she did some digging, and a woman trying to stop my interview is named Karen Schall. She's a professional protester. I found her at 100 different protests. Yeah. And they have pictures of her. So how could you afford, if they're not paying you, to be at all these protests?
Right. Again, this is just something that I'm surprised that we haven't woken up to now at this point. It's years and years it's been happening. We could talk about this. I covered the Cleveland riots when people were trying to burn down the city of Cleveland. And everyone who was down there to protest or to gather to see what's happening, or they're just unfortunately in the city of Cleveland, were telling you, people were showing up in vans in this gear and these masks, and there were pallets of bricks and cinder blocks just conveniently placed all over the place. Like, we can talk about it with BLM. We can talk about Black Lives Matter, who is an organization who has a website and a list of donors. They're all backed. So is QAnon. So is Antifa. So are all of these groups. They're just politicized warfare. It's never been citizens uprising against people like this. It's been people that are paid to stir up citizens to convince them that there's some kind of war going on. And the fact that we're not past this as a nation is crazy to me at this point.
Well, this is called insurrections. There's laws against that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Democratic Nebraska State Senator Michelle Kavanaugh has earned a reputation for disrupting behavior. In 2023, when the Nebraska legislature voted to pass a bill that would make most abortions after 12 weeks illegal and place restrictions on gender-affirming care for transgender individuals under the age of 19, Kavanaugh threw a fit on the Senate floor where she bizarrely chanted for over 2 minutes. Prior to the vote, Kavanaugh threatened to burn the session to the ground in an effort to filibuster the entire 2023 state legislative session to encourage permanently mutilating children. The nation has begun celebrations for America's 250th birthday, including a display at the Nebraska State Capitol, which features displays of historical figures, including signers of the Declaration of Independence. Kavanaugh reacted to the display by ripping some of the displays off the wall, and she was caught doing it on camera. There you go. That's a Democrat for you. And so we're coming up to the break here. We have a clip. And do you see what's happening now in Iran? We played the clip the other day about the fact that a gallon of water cost you more than costs 10 times what a gallon of gas costs there in Iran now. They have no water. They're out of water. They're hungry. They're rioting. And I watched Brett Baer today, and he says, we have no idea how many people we don't know that have been killed by the government of Iran. Well, we have an idea in this clip that we're going to play, and that's a lot. We're going to be showing you that here in a minute or two. But there's things happening now. And here's the bad thing, too, because they're taking all of these insurrectionists, these wackos out there that are going after ICE. And by the way, have you seen all the AI-generated stories they're showing about that?
No.
They're showing, everywhere you're going, they're showing that ICE agents going into a restaurant, and the restaurant owner throwing them out. It showed them being chased by the police in the cities. It shows them just really how they are unwanted anywhere they go, how people hate them and tell them to get out, and the ICE agents cower and run. That's what's going on all over. It's AI-generated propaganda put out by the left, folks. Don't buy it. Most of the people in this country are supporting, and they're behind President Trump and behind the ICE agents. The ICE agents are working, trying to protect us. We'll be back right after this with a whole lot more. Don't go away. More to come.
Thank you for listening to What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance. To support this ministry, head to wrwl.org. That's wrwl.org. Mail your donations to What's Right, What's Left Ministries, 14781 Sperry Road, Newberry, Ohio, 44065. If you missed part of tonight's program, you can check out the podcast at thewordcleveland.com. TheWordCleveland.com. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting What's Right, What's Left Ministries, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. The second hour is coming up next.